Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
Has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two.
Gilmore.
Oh, big stop.
Oh,
brother.
Lead Toledo artist. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead.
Hello, and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. I am Jason Mann. With me, as always, is Rich Krejci. And we are talking about the top 50 players of all time. Today, we are talking about Steve Nash. And our special guest is Brian Schroeder of Harvard Paroxysm. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hello. How are you doing?
Doing well. Rich, how are you?
I'm doing well. Don't worry about me. We got a guest. Right. We have someone else. Right. So don't concern yourself with me. I'm fine.
Fair enough. So we're going to talk about Steve Nash's case for being in a theoretical top 50 as we are continuing this project. We have a pretty good episode detailing Steve Nash's career from the previous fall. So if you have not listened to that, I also recommend checking that out. We'll probably have that in the show notes. But as far as just his top 50 case goes, statistically, he's 36th all time in win shares, 62nd in win shares per 48, 182nd in box score plus minus, 92nd in value over replacement player, two MVP awards, third MVP runner up, which I actually forgot about, that he was that close to a third MVP. Three times on the All-NBA first team, twice on the second team, twice on the third team. He had four top 10 seasons in win shares per 48. He was actually never in the top 10 in value over replacement player. I imagine that's because of defense. Yeah. And he was a third all-time in assists, first in free throw percentage, and 15th in true shooting percentage. So, Brian, you volunteered to talk about Steve Nash to, I guess, make the case for him. So, so what's the case for Steve Nash?
Well, first off, the most important case for him is that you'll often hear him talked about as if he was really, really good for like 5 years and then just kind of pretty good the rest of the way. And it honestly, he's one of the more consistent players of the entire millennium to this point. Just looking here, from 1999 to 2013, he played at least 1,500 minutes, shot at least 46% from the field, and at least, what is it? Over 40 every year, or at least 39% from deep every year. Or what is that? From when he was 24 to when he was 38. That's at least 11 points per 36, which for him wasn't always given. Given he, I think, his career high per 36 shots was like 13.5. So he just from a shooting perspective, he's one of the most consistent shooters of all time, and that's not even the part of his game that aesthetically was most memorable. You know, he's one of the flashiest passers who's ever lived. Also, one of the best. To be fair.
Yeah, I think when it comes to the mix of, you know, ability to score and ability to pass, at least ability to score efficiently and pass, you know, there aren't very many players who are even, you know, kind of near his league. I mean, I guess Steph Curry is emerging in that conversation, but yeah, he hasn't quite done enough in his career to be, to quite be there. You know, certainly he has that. And obviously, you know, as you mentioned, he, as we've previously mentioned, he directed some of the best offenses in NBA history, the most influential offenses in terms of changing the pace and style of the game. I'd say the weaknesses in his career are he was not a good defender, and in for a superstar guard, he did not really shoot very often. So the efficiency certainly is there, but if he had shot at a higher volume, you know, is the efficiency that strong? You know, he never had to take on that role, and being able to take on that role and take those amount of shots maybe is a more valuable skill than, you know, being efficient and taking fewer shots. It's tough because, of course, Nash had the ball in his hands a lot and directed the offense, and he's very important. But, you know, there's that to consider.
His usage was pretty consistently in the 20s, so it's not like he didn't shoot. But he was never, I mean, easy comparison. He's never what Westbrook is now. And Westbrook last year had, what, a usage over 30 and, like, a assist percentage over 40 or something? Just obscene amounts of workload. Nash was never that. He was never going to be that. His body couldn't hold up to it, for one. I mean, he would last 4 or 5 years. He was laboring it and not even sitting down on the bench, just laying on the sideline because he couldn't handle sitting in those chairs. It's also impressive. He did this till he was 38, and then he fell apart. That's important.
Yeah, and I think the best part about him, and the thing that we're going to talk about here in a little bit when we talk about the advanced stats, is when you look at the two pockets that he sort of – there's not many people who have that where – and Jason mentioned this as well, where he's an elite all-time great passer and then, like, an elite all-time efficient, you know, scorer as well, where, you know, he's not a high-volume scorer, but he's super efficient, a great shooter, whereas we don't get that with a lot of the other guys. No. And a lot of guys I'm going to list here are, you know, your Mark Jackson types, those sort of guys that were great passers, all-time great passers, but they couldn't do it at the level that Nash did on the offensive end, and to be as good a three-point shooter as well. It's just so rare. I mean, that's when, you know, when Jason Kidd put that together in the, you know, the back half of his career, it propelled, you know, it was one of the big parts of his team, you know, winning a title or whatever. And Nash had that the entire time of his career. It was like, yeah, I can hit threes and I can pass like crazy. I mean, that you don't get that very often.
He had, in the 05, 06, 07 era, he led the league in true shooting twice while also leading the league in assist percentage those same years.
That's insane, yeah.
And he had three-pointer rates near 40, near 0.4. So it's theoretically it shouldn't happen. It shouldn't be able to happen. Somebody is that prolific, really. It's the benefit of just being in the right place at the right time, going to Phoenix with D'Antoni at age 30. I mean, that's the thing. He won his two MVPs in his early 30s, and then continue playing for nearly another decade. That's just odd. He's an odd player, as far as a great player players go. His trajectory was not anywhere near what a great player should be. Although in Dallas, I think people sometimes will pretend like he was a role player in Dallas. Like, he was, what, 02, 03, 19 points per 36, 8 assists, played 2,700 minutes. I mean, just, he was there. He was honestly nearly as good as Dirk was for a little bit there. Maybe not.
Right. And people knew he was good too. And that's the thing that sort of unfortunately has become part of the narrative, is that, you know, the Suns kind of plucked this guy out of, you know, and you know, obviously it's not exactly to that extent where they just plucked him out of nowhere, but people kind of assume that the Mavs sort of said, yeah, go away, whatever, you know, who cares? You're not that important. And then Phoenix said, oh, we think, you know, no, they knew. I mean, Dallas knew what he was and what he was capable of and what he could do or whatever. And, you know, Cuban still talks about how it pains him to this day of how that, I mean, that was not a guy that they were like, yeah, whatever, you know, go away, Steve Nash. Yeah. We don't need you or whatever. I mean, they knew his value. And I think a lot of people that were ardent watchers of the NBA knew his value and knew what he was worth. So, yeah, the narrative that, you know, Phoenix kind of discovered him isn't quite, you know, accurate. And I don't think that many people think that. But, you know,
that might have been the narrative for a little while when he first burst onto the scene, burst into superstar.
Like, where is the, where'd this guy come from?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. And part of that's because I assume we all watched more SportsCenter around then. It's just that was the SportsCenter narrative. Mm-hmm. It's easy narrative. And now it's, I have to say, he'd be where he shoots. I mean, he didn't really shoot from mid-range at all, really.
He's a modern player. Yeah. He was the
I feel like player. He'd be more appreciated. Well, I mean, he'd be not quite as electric as Steph Curry as a scorer, but I feel like he'd be regarded similarly. They're similar players, so.
Doing some of his stats here, and Jason mentioned, I'm going to do some advanced stats here, and then we'll talk a little bit about, you know, kind of wrap up Steve Nash and what we sort of think about him. I did comparisons to his era and position. I thought that was important throughout the entire process to look at guys, you know, guards of his era and sort of where he ranks among stuff. He's 65th all-time amongst guards in his era for points per 36. Third in assists per 36. The only guys better are John Stockton and Mark Jackson. 13th in value over replacement player. Fourth in win shares. The only guards higher than him are Kobe Bryant, you know, Ray Allen, and Jason Kidd. really, you only look at Jason Kidd as like a pure point guard in that realm. So that's impressive too. So essentially second among point guards in his era, you know, next to Jason Kidd, and then ninth in win shares per 48. And then I thought this is an awesome one. His third in effective field goal percentage among guards in his era. And the only guys that are better than him are Brent Berry and Steve Kerr. And those were guys that were not asked to do, you know, you know, three fourths of what Steve Nash was asked to do. I mean, those guys are, you know, sit here and someone pass me the ball and I'll shoot it type guys. Nash wasn't that, and yet still ranks, you know, third behind those two guys. And I think that's super, super impressive. And then he'll look at rates among position all time. So this is guards of all time. He fifth in assists per 36. The only guys better than him are John Stockton, Johnny Moore, Porter, and Chris Paul. So that's, you know, great company to keep.
Yeah.
141st in points per 36. But again, this is including shooting guards and stuff like that. So if we look at just guards, that's not necessarily his game in that sense. 11th in three-point percentage, which I think is incredible. For being a point guard, I mean, that's insane. 23rd in field goal percentage, 24th in value over replacement. And then, again, what I think is awesome is fifth in effective field goal percentage all time among guards. I mean, that's right there. I mean, that for me right there, that's a no-brainer that you're going to put this guy in here. Because just looking at that, you go, wow, this guy's a great scorer. Oh, wait, yeah, and he's also, you know, fifth all time in assists per 36. Like, he's pretty much a you know, a home run for me.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm looking at his playoff for 36s, and they're in a lot of ways more impressive. Honestly, he had a bad 03-04, but he shot so much more. He still shot 48%, 37%, 38, 36, 48 from three for extended periods. Well, he was shouldering much more of the offense for the 7 seconds or less teams, where you know, it's the playoffs. You can't just run simple Amari Stoudemire pick and rolls all the time. You can do that in January when you're playing the Grizzlies, but you can't really do that against the Spurs in May.
Yeah. You know, one thing I wonder, like, where kind of does Nash belong, like, in the tiers of point guards? Like, I think the first tier for me is, like, Magic, Oscar, Stockton, and maybe once he accomplishes a few more seasons, I think he could kind of throw Chris Paul in that mix. And then is he like in the immediately next tier, or, you know, is he down a few point guards? Like, where kind of is his place, like, among in that list in those tiers?
I'd put him in that second tier, but I can understand lowering him a little. But I mean, if you're going too much lower, you're putting him with like Kevin Johnson. And you could put Gary Payton above him. I personally would probably do that, but the Kevin Johnsons of the world. And I'm fine with his defense. You always hear the caveat that he was a good team defender, which is true. Steve Nash was intelligent, but like, it didn't really matter. You hear that about Jose Calderon. Calderon's also pretty abysmal.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. So would we put him in first or Jason Kidd in first?
That seems more like a personal preference and maybe an aesthetic preference. Like, I'm perfectly fine with someone thinking that Jason Kidd was a better point guard. He might have been. But importantly here, Nash also, I've said a few times that Nash and Chris Paul are the only two recent point guards who seem to always dribble where they mean to dribble. But Nash always has the trick where he looks like he's not meaning to. Or like just his basic dribble was so tricky in that it would seem like he was out of control when he wasn't. And I really feel like that would just create space and trick people. Chris Paul is more machine-like, where I don't think I've ever seen Chris Paul miss dribble on his own. You know, he everything he does looks like it's what he meant to do all along, which is an amazing trait. Now, Magic obviously had that as well, and Stockton did, but he wasn't, it was harder to notice because he just never did anything differently. Nash, you could put Kidd above him, that's fine. Peyton, I said you could probably put above him, who also is in a lot of ways criminally underrated. I think it's more from that. I mean, there's a real gap in point guard. Like, point guard hierarchy is pretty recently weighted for obvious reasons. And then I think Terry Porter's really good, but I put him in that third tier.
Yeah, Billups maybe.
Billups, KJ.
Yeah, that's good, yeah.
I suppose you should have to throw Steph at least in the third tier at this point.
Yeah, we got to start talking about him a little bit, to maybe bump him up there. Yeah, I mean, I don't know for this project right now, but yeah, he's worth putting in there.
Yeah,
for
sure. Yeah, if you're doing point guard tiers, that's different than, you know, just players in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I'm leaning toward Nash, you know, being in. I think he's definitely on the likely list. I just kind of the thing to think about is, we don't necessarily need to have 10 players from all five positions or anything like that on the list, but I do think there some positional balance does make sense, just like some era balance, some, a little bit of balance of everything. So I'm just kind of trying to do the mental exercise of, okay, well, where does he land? And if he's like, four or five or six, then yeah, I think there's a real good chance he's on the list. If he's more like 8 or 9 or 10, then, it's a little bit more questionable.
I would wonder just who could easily name 7 or 8 or 9 definitively better point guards. And I challenge someone to do that.
Yeah, there are probably some of the early point guards
Cousy. Cousy was great, but I'm wondering where is. Yeah, I don't know. It's difficult.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing. I mean, I think there's a good chance that, he's right, like I said, in that 4, 5, and 6 range, depending on exactly where you kind of fall. But he's right around there, I would guess. Rich, do you agree?
Yeah, I absolutely. Yeah, I think Brian brought up the good point is that when you talk about that second tier guys, then you get into guys like a Kevin Johnson, right? And I think Steve Nash is demonstrably better than Kevin and absolutely. Yeah, so he's not in that first pocket. And then I guess you almost have to start a new category because I don't know who's in that second because he's better than those second guys. But I feel like he's definitely less than the – but I don't know. I mean, I could almost put him in that first pocket and probably be okay with it. Just think of him as, maybe the lowest guy in that. And that's not, any slouch, to be the fifth best point guard of all time. But, no, I think he's absolutely in that top.
He's just
top
so much worse a defender than all those other guys. You can't really –
like another little – like Stockton was very good. Tier. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all those guys at least had that on that end. But then again, you look at a shooter, and he's a better shooter than they all were. So it's an interesting, dynamic there of which you kind of.
Walt Frazier, I would put him ahead of. I would put him ahead of Nash probably, but I mean, you're still talking. Yeah. You're still talking like 5, or 6 guys. I mean, I still think Nash. I don't think the numbers game are hurting Nash yet, unless we do a bunch more research and find a bunch of guys who we kind of think. But I think he's around the number where I would say he's fairly safe.
Yeah, if you're going with any real positional balance, if you're not just weighting it all towards, all the dominant centers in history, he's probably – I can't conceive of him not getting in it somehow, just personally, just what he means. He's so important to the NBA right now is – as Alvin Gentry would likely tell you, just incredibly indebted to him and to D'Antoni.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, influence is definitely part of our criteria, I think. And, you've made the case. He's definitely a very strong when it comes to that as well. Is there anything else, Brian, that you want to add about Nash?
I think he's one of the better athletes in the history of the NBA, just from a conditioning standpoint. He similarly to Bird, he held his body together almost through sheer will and conditioning for 3 or 4 years at the end. And he was really, really good in 2012 when he, by all accounts, should not have been, just, going by the basic trajectory of the player would have. But, he, from the entirety of the 2000s, that decade, he was incredibly efficient, incredibly good. And that's not an easy thing to do. I feel like that's maybe something we should all appreciate a little more.
Yeah. For someone his size, for point guards to, have that kind of longevity that he had late in his career. I mean, there's Stockton and Kitt, and that's really about it. Post 35 point guards, post 35 players in general are rare, but especially point guards, that's an incredibly rare thing. All right, Brian. Well, thanks so much for being on the show. Is there anything that you would like to tell people about that you do or anything you'd like to plug or what have you?
I'm not really doing anything right now in the off season. I have some stuff I might be writing later, but until the season starts, it's just we got almost 3 months. This is ridiculous.
That's why we're doing this. Pass the time. So
watch basketball, watch NBA TV, I guess. Just buy the budget again. There was a Grant Hill 50-point game on there a few days ago. It was terrible, but that was fun to watch. Until then, I guess, you know, I mean, all praises to the HP overlords. I guess we must all... there is no resistance is futile for the HP board.
And at some point, all three of us are going to have to get together to talk wrestling one of these days. Yeah. So we'll... That's what we really want to talk. This NBA stuff is a distraction.
Talking some wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Our deep dark that Jason and I don't tell people about.
Yeah. Right.
Some people.
You revealed a lot on these podcasts, I feel like, Rich. So, anyway, Ryan, thanks so much for... That... Go ahead.
John Wall is eighth all-time in assists per game. I didn't realize that.
Really?
8.67. Yeah.
Huh.
Oh, that is...
Higher than Nash and Rondo. Stephon Marbury, that's not
a surprise. There you go. Yeah, Wall might be another guy we're talking about in 10 years. For this
game. I have to imagine so at this point.
We have way too many good players. And we really, yeah, that's the thing about this is like, you know, we're not even really considering the great generation of point guards that's coming up now, you know, as far as this list. I mean, you know, Chris Paul is, you know, pretty much the most recent guy who I think we're seriously considering. And there's, you know, as we mentioned, Steph, and there's, you know, other guys who are just incredible who are definitely going to be, you know, worth consideration in another 10 years. Westbrook, absolutely. Yeah. So.
Then we look at, I'm just trying to fill out the sort of the second and third tiers. I think Mark Price is probably a third tier guy that we forget about. Mark Price was fantastic.
Yeah. And maybe the closest to the pure, yeah. Like we talked about the really, really great shooter and also a real good passer as well. Yeah, he'd probably be the next closest to to Nash in that respect of those two, you know, blending those two together.
Yeah, Isaiah Parker. Thomas, too, he's another one who I, you know, even though the advanced stats don't like him quite as much, I do feel like he's a guy who, I think in that second tier, I think he's, you know, a strong candidate for that.
Oh, he's definitely second tier. Why wouldn't he be if I did put him higher than that, honestly? Mm-hmm. Isaiah played in a league that wasn't tailored to the advanced stats we have for this league. I don't know. It's hard to. I put more stock into analyzing current players with our current statistical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the one thing.
The players in the past.
Yeah, the one thing about Isaiah is that he didn't necessarily grade out somewhat as compared to the players of his era as well. But I think there's, you know, enough intangibles. Yeah. I think we're going to talk more about Isaiah in future shows to kind of get into that. But your point about the difficulty of comparing players in different eras is well taken. We've definitely found that in our research for sure.
Yeah. All right.
All right, well, Brian, thanks so much for being on the show. And everyone, you can find us at hardwoodparoxysm.com, part of the HP Basketball Network. And also check us out, our forums at overandbacknba.com, where you can discuss any of the players that we talk about or any of the shows or really any topic about basketball history that you're interested in. Just go to overandbacknba.com and sign up. It's easy, and we'll be glad to see you. So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.